Hey everyone, welcome to the Worship Artistry Podcast. My name is Jason Houtsma, and with me today is everybody. We got Daniel. Say hey, Daniel.
Hey, what's up?
We got Josh Ward, drum instructor extraordinaire. And extraordinaire, did I say that? That's a new word. I
just like an instructor and a coordinator. Or something.
Yeah, he's an extraordinaire.
I like it.
And an extraordinaire on the keys, Ryan King. What's up, guys?
Yo.
So today we decided to do a little roundtable. It's been a while since we've had everyone on the podcast because we used to do things on Blab, and that used to make that super easy. And now we're having to kind of like jury rig something to actually make it all work. Daniel, where are you going? And Daniel just got up and left.
He decided he quit.
He's like, I'm out. You didn't call me in extraordinaire.
Hey, we have a new bass instructor opening. So anybody who wants to.
Hey, just closing the door so that we don't have to listen to Michael Farren's songwriting.
Oh, there we go.
Great. Now we're never going to get him on the podcast. Thank you. So it's been a while. We used to do our podcast on Blab, which used to make this really easy. And then they went away. They were like, we're not doing this anymore. And we got sad. And so we've been trying to figure out a way to get us all on. So we're giving this a shot. We're going to see how it works. Hopefully it doesn't turn into a total nightmare. But we wanted to get together today and actually talk about the hype of worship. We got into this conversation we get together once a week and just chat on the, chat on the screen. And we just found ourselves kind of talking around this idea of like the worship industry, kind of what is sold to worship pastors, what we hear, what kind of messages we hear, and the hype around it, and whether or not that's really appropriate, and to try and dig through and find things that are appropriate. So guys, let me just ask you off the bat. Daniel, let's start with you. Actually, no, you're here all the time. Ryan, let's start with you. what kind of messages do you hear as a worship pastor? If you were to step away and say, man, these are the top one or two messages that I feel like I get in my culture and my surrounding in the worship industry world. What are those messages that you hear and where do they come from?
It's funny you mentioned that because yesterday I had lunch with a worship pastor at a very large church and we were talking about this exact thing. And the message is pretty consistent amongst many that I've heard and that's, you know, in the worship realm, there's a lot of resources out there for worship pastors, worship teams to help lead their congregations in worship. I mean, that's the goal, is to help lead your church in worship, whatever that looks like for your congregation. And so you've got all these resources like praise charts and multi-tracks. You've got us to teach, how to play the songs and things like that. And although in and of themselves, those resources are good, what is ending up happening with many churches is that musicians are, in essence, turning into robots, I guess you could say. And it's becoming very predictable, very, in some ways, stagnant for musicians and singers because at the end of the day, all they're really doing is regurgitating the songs that are out there. Mm-hmm. And so you've got these heavy hitter providers of songs like Hillsong, Elevation, Jesus Culture, and all these guys, which are great, and they're writing great songs. But what's ending up happening is a lot of these songs are sounding the same, and because those churches have achieved a certain status, other churches are wanting to kind of get to that same status, whatever that means for them. And so they're doing these songs, and they're just trying to be a copy of somebody else rather than being unique for where they are. And so the worship pastor I talked to yesterday, he's at a church of about 30,000, multi-site campus, and he said that's something they talk about all the time, is that their musicians aren't really musicians. They're great worship musicians, but you get outside of the worship realm, and they don't know how to do anything else. And so on one side of the coin, it's fine because at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're trying to lead your church in worship. You're not trying to play a Bruno Mars tune, for your church. But on the flip side of that is that their musicianship is limited to the worship realm. And you get outside of that, and they're like deer in the headlights. And so it's becoming, because of the use of more and more tracks in worship, and really just locked to this arrangement, you're just kind of, like I said, just regurgitating what's on the album, and just kind of almost kind of becoming a DJ in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so I find that, and that's consistent amongst many worship pastors that I've talked to, is that it's great for leading worship in many ways, because their congregations are engaging in with certain, you know, whether it's Hillsong or whoever. But again, all the songs start sounding the same. You know, every song becomes a power ballad. It becomes this big epic thing, and it just kind of all is the same. And there's really no life for creativity in moving forward. So that's kind of what I've heard is kind of a consistent message from many people.
So Daniel, where do you think that idea of right and wrong comes from? It's 'cause to what I hear a lot of times in that same scenario is that, you know, this is the right way to play this song. Mm-hmm. You know, the artist came up with this thing, and this is how you do it, and you don't stray from it, and you follow this exact thing, and, you know, this is the tone you have to have on your guitar, and this is the, you know, all the things that, like, we work on these things. Mm-hmm. Disclaimer, if you haven't been to worshipartistry.com, what the four of us do is we take worship songs, and then we make five-piece arrangements of those so that you can reproduce them in your church. But we never want it to stop there. We never want to, we want you to learn how to think about the music so mm-hmm. that you're actually growing as a musician and are able to inject the personality of your community into these songs rather than just be stuck to this arrangement. But mm-hmm. Daniel, where do you think that idea comes from? Yeah, that there is a way to do this.
Absolutely. I think it's not only within church culture at all. I think it's completely a bigger global thing. You know, if you look at how in the last 10 years, technology has kind of really kicked up a notch, and it's continuing to do that. The curve, the growth curve of technology, of social media, all those type of things is growing so fast and so quick that people feel like, man, if I don't learn about this or that, like Snapchat or this or whatever it is, I'm going to miss out. And if you're a realtor or if you're an insurance salesman, whatever it is your job, people are all saying you need to advertise on social media, you need to have a presence on this, or you need to do that. And so everyone's kind of caught in this technology thing, which causes everyone to say, if I'm not doing the latest of this or that, we're going to be stuck in the dark ages, and we're going to be left behind, and we're not going to be doing what everybody else is doing right, and we're going to be doing stuff wrong, because there's obviously people are saying this is the way you have to do it. And if you just go online, you'll see there's 100 people trying to teach you how to do something. This is how I got this many clicks on my video. This is how I did blah blah blah. You know, and so it's kind of rubs off on the whole church, I think. And a lot of pastors, especially of smaller churches, they go, our little church is going to miss out if we don't get on the latest greatest of everything when it comes to technology, you know, sound systems, you know, planning systems for their church, probably accounting software. There's all sorts of stuff that's being pushed out through you know, the media and the branches that are sending stuff out to these churches to say buy this, and you'll have a better setup. It'll be quicker, it'll be easier. But you and I both know that when you go on holiday and you turn your phone off, there's something that happens where you go, oh gosh, that's amazing to just get away from all that stuff. And now I can hear better, and I can, so that, you know, there's the good side of technology, which allows us to do things like teach people online how to play a song, which is amazing, which you couldn't have done 20 years ago. But the bad side of it is that you can get wrapped up in all that stuff, chasing your tail. And especially for churches that are smaller, the insecurity of feeling like we have to have tracks and we have to have this and we have to have that, they end up looking like a circus running around trying to recreate something that's actually only really works in an arena. And so for me, the thing is, you've got to teach people how to think about music first before they start thinking about all that other stuff. Otherwise, you're putting the cart before the horse. People really need to be able to go and have a reference point for a song and go, man, we could play this with a cajon and an acoustic guitar and it's going to sound awesome. Instead of panicking, going, oof, we don't have tracks, we're absolutely in the, you know, it's dead in the water. So that's where I think it's a bigger problem than just church marketing. I think it's just we're a product of our environment.
Well, I think when you think about marketing, I mean, that's such a buzzword. I mean, everybody feels like there's a way to do this. And that's what people sell. Like you were saying, there's all these people that go, this is how I got this many clicks. And they give you this. I've seen them. We get emails. People send us stuff all the time. Hey, your website, I can get you this much more attention and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, they all have the same language to it. It's all super salesy. It's just like, this is how you're going to make $1 million. And this is how you, you know, it's all that like, hey, give us a top 10 of this. Number six is going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, and click to me, that just cheapens whatever we're doing. Right. But you have all these institutions, you know, specific that you can, I mean, you can just kind of go around the web and see the products that are out there. And it's like, they take on that sales language. And then you're just like, even if you have a really thoughtful product that you're like, I just want to help the church. If you're being told that this is the way to get that to people and that that's the only way that they're going to accept it, it seems that that's going to create that kind of shouting voice. Like, look at me. No, look at me. No, look at me. Even if people aren't trying to be that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So,
do you think that some of that stuff comes from how a lot of music is centralized right now? You know, like when I think about going to Nashville, you know, I come down, Daniel's in Nashville, you know, everybody else is fairly close there. And I'm like way up here in the Pacific Northwest, which is the opposite of Nashville. But what I did notice is when you go to Nashville, like it's a culture, right? And there's a lot of music is being made by the same people. It's being either written by it or produced by it. And so all those things naturally have those voices and those fingerprints on things. Do you see that being in a music capital?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about it is it's, if you look at, you know, I come from South Africa, so coming into America in the first place, just to live here, when we started getting out on the road, we'd noticed that we pull off on an exit and suddenly we feel like even though we've driven 900 miles, we had exactly the same place again, because it's a strip road with Wendy's, McDonald's, you know, and it's Whataburger, whatever it is. And you go, wait a minute, I've been here before. Am I still with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay. And I go, we've been in this place before. This is weird. And it was because of this idea that the bigger brands, the biggest franchises, they grow bigger and bigger and they kind of crush out the opposition. And so if you look at the songwriters, first and foremost, there's 10 guys writing 90% of the songs that are sung in church, you know, and then there's six major movements. Like if you take Bethel, Hillsong, Passion, you know, and then some smaller ones like Elevation and these other up and coming, they're like almost like these franchises of music that are basically kind of they're the loudest, and so they kind of dominate the scene to where there's actually very little space, if you want to call it that, for other creatives to get their thing in there. You know, like if you watch that music parody about John Mark McMillan, who's that guy? Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, there's a formula. There's a formula to how people are being told this is what you need to do to get it right, and you have to be like those guys and these guys. And there's a couple of producers here in Nashville that are producing the bulk of the big CCM worship songs that are going out. They've got people working underneath them, and they're kind of the guys that sign off on the mix. And it's just like a pyramid vibe of one guy at the top saying this is what it sounds like right now, and that guy'll be hot for a certain amount of months or years, and then it'll move to somebody else. And it seems that that's the way it is here in Nashville. It is very centralized. It is, especially with the music industry shrinking and not the same amount of money being made by by the labels. They don't have any money to develop new artists or take a risk on anything new, so they have to always go to the lowest common denominator and say, this is definitely going to work, this is definitely going to make us money. And because they're a business first, they have to think of their bottom line, and so they'll say, well, you know, these guys have got it right, so we're gonna have to do what they're doing and or think of what they're going to be doing in 6 months and try and emulate what they're about to do. And it's all that kind of stuff, second guessing. And then there's a couple in amongst all that. Every day here in Nashville, I do meet authentic, amazing, you know, people that are also involved in labels and involved in the industry that are trying to do it for the right motivation completely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing I want to be real clear here. In the conversation that we're having, we're not trying to come down on anybody. I mean, pretty much every person that I've met in Nashville, even talking about this stuff, even though I'm sitting there because I feel like somewhat of an outsider every time I go there, because I'm just like there's one time, Josh, you'll love this. I was sitting at a table and I'm listening to these drummers and they're talking about their sound samples and well, then this is how I do this. And there's two pro drummers and I just kind of piped up and I was like, oh yeah. I was like, you know, actually I really like drums that just sound like really natural, like just sound like everybody's sitting in the same room. And it was like a record scratch. It was like, they both like looked at me and they were just like, yeah, anyway, so I have like 8 samples on my drum, on my snare drum right now. And then like I layer that and this is how, and you know, obviously I'm not a drummer. So that's maybe, am I out of place there, Josh? Like you've written articles about, you know, mixing in with the band, being in the congregation, how to play to the room, a lot of that kind of stuff that really seems to be a big part of your playing. How do you work that into these songs that you're teaching all the time that are sometimes very complex and often just going to the roof?
Yeah. So, I mean, I use samples sometimes too, you know, but I feel like the whole sample thing came about, and Dan's been in the biz for a while, so he could probably help with this too, if I'm totally wrong. When you're in a studio setting, you get drum sounds. But as you move through the day, or through the session, your drums are gonna eventually fall out of tune from where they were or whatnot. And they're not going to be right where they are. So usually you'll get just a sample of every drum that you're using in that session, to where if your drums fall out, the producer, mix and engineer, whatever, can pull back from that sample and place it over that specific hit to get the same across the board sound from start to finish within that project. Mm-hmm. And from there, I think samples have just become a quick way to get away from not spending as much time getting the natural sound of your drum, possibly, you know, like, oh, don't worry about that, we'll just sample over that, you know, like I've heard that a lot. But it's a stylistic thing too, because you know, a lot of these new worship songs have a lot of electronically produced beats, you know, or loops within them too. So it's kind of a style thing. But with me, like, I'm with you, like, I love a naturally, you know, in a great room, a natural sounding drum kit, you know, nothing's mm-hmm. ever gonna beat that, really. But I do like a lot of these samples and stuff that people like Paul Mabry and Nashville Sample Co., like all those, they're great samples. They're awesome sounding stuff that you can plug in where it's needed. But as far as songs go and teaching that stuff, because some of it, like you said, it becomes very complex sometimes. A lot of that stuff sounds great on a record. A lot of it sounds great in an arena. Sometimes you can't translate the same sound of all that in a Sunday worship set at most of our churches, you know, unless you're at some mega mm-hmm. church, you know, that seats who knows how many people. And you can really play out, you can play over with samples, you know, on top of your kit, and it's all going to sound good. But as far as teaching that in lessons, sometimes, you know, I'll try to mimic an electronic sound or groove. But a lot of times too, I think to myself, like, what are most of these people that are listening to these lessons and learning these songs, like, where are they going to be playing this? You know, what atmosphere or room are they going to be playing this in? And a lot of times, you know, if it's something that doesn't specifically have to be there, in my mind, where I'll just leave it out, you know, oh, let's just let the keys take this, you know, or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's a stylistic thing. I think it has its time to where, you know, samples can shine. And then a lot of times too, you know, you can do without them. So if that, I did a lot of babbling, but hopefully that answered your question.
No, man, that was fantastic. Bring it always.
Mm. Perfect.
So Ryan, I got a question for you. So, you know, one thing I hear Josh saying is really talking about the perfection of sound. You know, you're sitting there and going, okay, here's these drums and we got this perfect hit. Let's use that. You know, popular music now, I hear it on everything. It drives me insane, but I hear auto-tune on everything. Even when people are like, oh, you can't really hear it on here. It's like, no, I definitely hear it on there. Our ears are becoming so accustomed to perfect music. Do you think that some of the desire to get that perfect live, like record quality sound on Sunday, do you feel like some of that comes from our getting used to hearing music that is always perfect?
Yeah, I think part of it, it's that we're hearing stuff that has been made as perfect as it can. And in doing so, it's lowered the quality of musicianship for people. Because you can get into, you know, I think context is everything with, as it relates to music. You know, when we're listening to albums, those albums were recorded in studios, you know. Sometimes they're live projects, they're recorded in arenas. And that's specific to their context, to their congregation, to their culture, whatever that is. And when you're in a studio setting, you've got the, you know, in many ways, you've got the time to perfect things so it just sounds pristine. But many times, whenever you're listening back to that stuff, the purpose of that is for you to listen back to it. Many people are listening back in their cars, in their, you know, on headphones or whatever it might be. And like Josh said, many times that stuff doesn't translate live. And even what I've found with many churches, like just like what you're talking about, auto-tune, that auto-tune is great because it helps, you know, get pitch up and everything. But it's also a detriment because what can happen is, you know, a singer can sing and it not be the best performance. It can be an okay performance, and the producer can say, oh, don't worry about it, I'll just fix that with auto-tune. And so what it does is that begins to lower the standard of musicianship inside that person. Instead of saying, hey, let's do that again and get it right, instead of saying, oh, I can just fix that electronically. Same thing with a bad performance of a musician, you know, whether it's drums, bass, keys. We've got so many resources at our fingertips that we can sound replace. We can replace that out of tune drum. We can replace that bad bass hit or that bad keyboard part. We can replace it, but that's fine for recording. But when we're leading people in worship, we have one opportunity. On Sunday morning, we have one chance to do this song. We don't have the chance to stop and say, oh, I hit a bad note. Let's fix that and erase everybody's memory of what just happened, you know. And so, yeah, and I think what that does is it affects everybody. We hear this perfection, and obviously we want to bring our best and bring excellence, and so we end up trying to achieve that, and then what happens is that if we don't achieve that, it's like anything less than perfection is unacceptable. And that starts translating into what we do on Sundays, that, you know, if this singer over here is just a little pitchy, it's like, well, are they right for the team? You know, and it starts going down that road. This person, he doesn't know his G flat demolished chord. You know, it's like, well, okay, we need to train them. Don't just kick them off the team. And so it just creates this rabbit hole for, you know, for many things. And so, yeah, I think because we're listening to all these pristine things. And again, I mean, for me, and I know for all of you guys, when we're doing this, whether we're teaching, whether we're recording, whatever it is, we want to bring our best. But we, at the end of the day, we also need to, I think, accept that it comes down to that difference between perfectionism versus excellence. And in that, it's an attitude. You know, I've always said that excellence is striving for perfection, but whatever perfect is for you there, as long as you bring your best, kind of deal. And that you're, at the end of the day, you're okay if it's not quite perfect.
It's funny that you said those two things, because when we were first starting worship artistry, I was sitting down, I was trying to think about, like, what is the message that I want to tell people? Like, what is this website going to be about? And I came up with Bring Your Best, because it was going to be about wherever you are, do your best at it, and then that'll make you better. So the idea of, like, hey, just give it your all, and even if you're a beginner and you give it your all, that's still awesome, right? And we got in the conversation among my partners, and they were like, one of them was like, what if we made it play it right? And I was just like, nope, there's just no such thing. There's no such thing as playing it right. Like, you could say, play it exactly like the record, but chances are you don't have the 40 tracks. I mean, gosh, you know, we've talked before about how we arrange songs on Worship Artistry and how it's like, oh, I'll pull up. I mean, this week, it's today going up. We're putting up Glorious Day by Christian Stanfill from the latest Passion record. And I go on there and I go, okay, there's an acoustic guitar, there are three electric guitars, there's this main idea, there's this main idea, but this guitar is doing this one, and this one's doing this one, and then there's this other one that's carrying the rhythm, and if I drop that rhythm, I lose everything. So you're spending all this, so I'm spending all this time trying to get this thing to be like a one guitar part. But if you are, if you're trying to do that on your own, or you're just like, that's the standard that I have to have, then you're not, you're never going to be able to reproduce it. Cause you look at every song and I see like, okay, there's five keyboards and there's six guitars. And on those six guitar tracks, there's like multiple guitars on each track. Right. So how, but you don't, but most bands don't play with that. That's just what you get on a recording, but we kind of create that. So let me ask you guys this. The, if you were going to, I'll just go each one of you. If you were going to give a message, if you were going to say, okay, let's change the message here. The message is, you know, play it right, play it pristine, play it perfectly, have a big full sounding thing. You should sound like you're playing in an arena, even if you only have 50 people in your congregation, which is just awkward on its own. You know, it's like that youth pastor that comes out to five kids and is like, how's everybody doing? You know, it's like, yeah, good, Bob. You know, if you were going to change the message, if you were going to, because I don't want to be negative on this. I want to be positive. I want to be like, okay, these aren't the messages we want you to hear. How would you change your message to the church? What would you say that's a positive pulling forward?
I would say do what's right for your congregation.
Amen.
And that's what I would say. You know, I do, I've done some of these Facebook Live videos, and that's one thing that I always come back to in it is that do what works for your congregation. And I remember when I first started out in ministry over 15 years ago, the church that I was at that time, Saddleback was huge. Rick Warren had just come out with the Purpose Driven Life book. Everybody was snatching it up. And, you know, it was a great book and it was doing great things. And because of that, everyone wanted to be like Saddleback. And our church wanted to be so much like Saddleback that we adopted their mission statement, their vision statement, the whole layout of their organization, like what they called all of their different ministries. And I remember sitting there saying, why are we doing this? Are we trying to fulfill the call that God has put on our church, or are we trying to fulfill the call that God has put on somebody else's church? And I've said that for so long, and almost every church that I've ever been at, I've always challenged the leadership and said, hey, we need to look at what is God calling us to do in our culture with our community and fulfill that. And at the same time, not necessarily try to reinvent the wheel. I mean, it's okay to grab things that have been successful for people and other churches and other musicians and such and try them out and see if they work. There's nothing wrong with that. But if it doesn't work, okay, move on and find out, okay, what works for your congregation. If you're in a church of 50 people and you're meeting in a coffee house, I mean, I don't know that trying to pull off a big, massive elevation Hillsong tune the way that it's done on the album is necessarily going to be the right thing. It could be. I'm not saying that it's not. But I know anytime that I've been in a smaller venue or a smaller church with maybe limited resources, man, a lot of times it's just better just to keep it simple. And like Dan said, you know, man, pull out the acoustic guitar and the cajon and try to make this thing, make it work the way it needs to for the you know, situation that you're in.
Yeah, but I think it's funny because you think about like, oh, when you see, if you see a video or something of U2 sitting in a, like sitting in a room with people and they're, you know, they're in an interview or something, they're able to reproduce their songs without having that epic. They're like, I'm in a room with you. So here is with the, like you said, with the guitar, a little cajon and sing it. You sing a little different. Everything changes to the environment. So they, you know, those kind of guys are the best of the best. They're better than I'll ever be at what I do. And they know how to do that really well. So I think that's a really great point, Ryan. How about you, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm with Ryan 100%. I honestly think that a lot of people, you know, that are, you know, they, like I said, you can get very, very focused on what's being dished out to you, and you can be very focused on the stuff that you're listening to, and you're being told this is what it needs to be like, and you can only really, a lot of guys I think are limiting what they actually listen to. So they listen to the biggest worship tunes and they go, wow, this is amazing. I want to be in a moment like this in our church. So that, because the stuff's produced so well and it sounds great, obviously you want to be at a Passion event or a Bethel event, but that's not exactly a reality for Sunday morning. And if you try to recreate that, it gets so weird. It just does not, in your head, it might be like, well, yeah, we're doing it. And then there's people there that don't even, you know, that have never been in church before going, what are these guys doing? You know, and if you have a visitor come in, they're like, I had a friend whose church I went to recently, and they do like dance music in their church, and they've got a DJ, and they've got all this stuff going on, and there's about 30 people in their church. And it was so awkward. It was just so weird to me. It was like, I was like, man, dude, just pull out the guitar and acoustic guitar, and let's just sing to the Lord. And I think, so behind it all, you really have to think, like, if your motivation is purely to get people that are not musicians, people that are coming in, and it's in the morning, it's already a big deal. It's not even in the evening. We're not talking about a nighttime show here. We're talking about coming in the morning with a cup of coffee. They've just woken up. They spend their time doing work in a corporate office all week, and you're getting those people to want to connect with the Lord through singing and music. That's already a big ask. So if you think about it from that perspective, think, imagine if your dad was at the back of the hall and you had to play these songs for him, and you wanted him to meet with Jesus. What's the best way for him to connect with God? Or a young kid that's 13 or 12, or, you know, you got to think about this whole group of multi-generational people coming together in one room and wanting them all to meet the Lord. And that's not to scare anybody off in this moment. It's to say, hey, let's just imagine we're in a life group and all you've got is a piano or an acoustic guitar and you have to make it work. And I think if you're a worship leader, or if you're the worship pastor of your church, a good thing to do would be to actually have worship with your team, maybe even just with your actual band, before you start getting into all the technical stuff. Just say, hey guys, let's just worship for half an hour together with acoustically in this room behind the stage in another room somewhere, and make it like a life group setup. And then soon you'll realize the songs that work and the songs that don't work in a smaller situation, especially if you're a smaller church. And instead of just trying to say, I think we're getting this right, you can rather go, look, this didn't feel amazing. Let's try this. Let's try another song. Let's try this one. And then get your church to work out exactly what genre you guys are, because that's the other problem, is people, they jump from one complete genre to another complete genre in the same worship service. And it can be so jarring and weird. Instead of going, hey, you know, we've got 150 people. You know, the stuff that we feel most comfortable in is these songs. And if we can get these other amazing new songs that have just come out to feel like our genre, and we get it right, then great. But otherwise, let's just not play that song. Let's rather play the songs that are working for our congregation to meet with the Lord. You don't have to feel under pressure to be playing always all the newest songs. There's some amazing songs. When I lead worship for some of the events I do, I'll pull out As the Deer because I just know that it works for the people that are in the room at that point. My self-worth is not tied into me playing the latest songs. I just want those people to connect with God, and I think that's the key.
Yeah, I think you know, the question that I always wondered, I thought that was a great point, Daniel. It's like, you have to ask, why are people here? And I think somewhere along the lines, the church, like the modern church movement, got into the idea that people are going to come here for the music. Like, the music is going to be so awesome that they are going to walk in the door. And it probably started back when, like, Vineyard was doing stuff. Like, that was when music started sounding a little more like rock, right? Like, you had that. And then, you know, Delirious came across the pond, and it was, and they, I remember talking to Stu, and he was like, we didn't even have this idea of what Christian music was. We were just playing in Britain. And then we came here and they were like, no, you got to fit into this thing. And I won't even try and do it with his awesome British accent. But we got this idea that this is what's going to draw people in. And I feel like if I want to just listen to music, like, I don't listen to worship music usually, because I work on it all at Worship Artistry. I'm trying to equip the church with it. But in terms of what I listen to in my daily life, it's totally different. And if I expect worship music to become what the pop music I listen to in the car, or the, you know, whatever style that I like, if I expect worship to become that also kind of puts it into that camp for me a little bit of like, well, I'm the consumer. I come in and I judge it and I go like, do I want this or not? Yes or no. And then I decide if I'm going to stick around or leave. Whereas I feel like congregational music, if we're really leading, we're leading people into engaging with the community. and into being a part of something that's much bigger than themselves. And that's a whole lot less of standing around watching and judging the band. And it's a whole lot more of engaging and singing. And when you do that, it doesn't matter if it sounds like you two, right? It's like it matters that we're together. That's what's happening. And we're lifting up the name of Jesus and however that goes. And that doesn't mean that you can't express that in those other styles. I mean, at Worship Artistry, we know what everybody likes because we look at the charts. We can't do a bunch of lessons for a song that like nobody's going to watch because it takes us a ton of time and energy to do that. But as you go down the list, you go, well, these are clearly the bands that are the kind of the biggest. And we try and grab different ones and, you know, pull ones out of obscurity a little bit too. But there's definitely something that I get that's what people enjoy, but it's important to remember that that's not why they're showing up. They're not showing up to listen to a record. They're showing up to engage with people. Mm-hmm. How about you, Josh? What about, if you were going to give a message to worship musicians, a positive message, what would it be?
I hate going last because everybody steals what I want to say. No, I like some stuff that Ryan, you know, Dan talked about, and you as well. So I'll like use that as a summary, in my opinion. Yeah. So our whole purpose as worship leaders is to make, because everyone on this platform is a worship leader, you know, not just the main person who's leading the song, in my opinion. So as worship leaders, our job is to make worship intimate with the congregation. So as Ryan said, do what's best for whatever setting you're in. You know, if you're in a small setting, like he was talking about, just acoustic guitar and the cajon percussion, you know, you don't need all that production, you know, because I feel like that's a lot of worship music has just gone to this big production, you know, and that's another podcast in itself probably. But then on the flip side, you have bigger churches that have, you know, a lot more people that go to them, and which isn't a bad thing at all. That's awesome. If you're involved in a huge church like that. But once you step into that environment, the whole acoustic feel isn't going to translate to that congregation. So you have to step it up a notch. You know, you have to get louder. You have to reach out a little bit further to get intimate with that community, if you want to call it. So that, and then on the other thing we were talking about, just as far as like the whole worship genre, I do think there has been a lot of copying, you know, stylistically here lately, and everything does kind of starts to sound the same in a way. So like back in the day, you had Chris Tomlin was like a huge, you know, artist out there. And a lot of his songs were, you know, all you heard was like Chris Tomlin, you know, which we still hear him a lot, but now, you know, the style is kind of changing. So we're hearing elevation, you know, vertical church, you know? And then, you know, Hillsong's still out there too, but it's almost like Elevation and churches like that style is a little different from the old Hillsong that used to be really popular, but Hillsong's kind of coming back too. But yeah, so I just in a nutshell, like Ryan said it perfectly, like do what's right for your church, you know, don't get all caught up in the hype of, you know, making it all huge. And because worship does draw people in, you know, you do need to have a great worship environment, in my opinion, because I know my generation, that's a big part of my church experience on a Sunday is worship, you know. But should it be all about that? No. But that's a good starting point to grow on as far as bringing people in, getting people, you know, interested in your church or wherever you're involved at. And then, you know, let the pastor and the message take them from there, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Awesome. I do. I know what you're saying. what was the one when you did the podcast with Garrett? It was just, everything was like, cool, man.
Cool, man.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So
cool, man. That's cool. Awesome. Well, guys, that's all awesome stuff. Let me just ask one more question now, because it's kind of brought this. So one thing we're obviously all saying is you have to do what's best for your church. Well, what do you say to a worship pastor that goes, well, how do I know what's right for my church? Because everything that I'm getting hit with, you know, in the magazines and on the internet, everything is coming across. It all kind of has this same feel. You're telling me to do something that's right for my church, and maybe that's not right for my church. How do you figure out what's right for your church?
I got a perfect thing for this.
Do it. You start.
Just pray about it. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
No, Josh, don't say you're kidding. That's a good
answer.
No,
it's totally right. That wasn't the thing. Yeah. So, no, I think, and I'm not a worship leader, so I probably shouldn't even speak first on this, but you just got to.
You are. You're a worship drummer.
You just got to try.
And therefore, a worship leader.
You just got to try stuff, man. If it doesn't translate well, it doesn't work, there's always next Sunday, you know, and pray about it until then. There you go.
Yeah, I think just like Josh said, I mean, you pray about it. That, and I think going to God's Word. I mean, it all has to start there. I mean, worship pastors, I think too many times worship pastors, worship leaders, they start with stuff that is coming out of the industry rather than starting with the thing that really matters, which is prayer and God's Word. And then from there, branching out and trying to figure out what is right. And I think sometimes it just takes common sense. Man, ask trusted people in your church. You know, when was it that you had incredible worship times in your church? You know, before you came as the worship leader, worship pastor, ask them, when was it great and why was it great? And then start to get feedback from people. And then try to find stuff that maybe is similar to that and try it and see if it works. Have trusted people on your team that you can run stuff by. I mean, you know, it's not just because you're a worship pastor or worship leader, it's not a one-man show. Having trusted people on your team that you can run songs by and say, hey, what do you think about these songs? Do you think this would connect with our people? Does it connect with you? Because if it connects with you, it connects with trusted people on your team, there's a good chance it could connect with your congregation. So yeah, I think praying about it, God's Word, and just having people on your team to run stuff by and try it out and see what works and what doesn't. And if it doesn't work, move on.
I wanted to tell a quick little short story that I heard when I was at the Y. The one time I was sitting there reading in the room where the older folks sit and they play cards and everything. And this lady that was there, she said, do you go to church? She said to the other lady, and she says, I don't go to church anymore, the old lady said. And she was like, why don't you go there? She says, the music. So she says, what is it about the music? She says, crap is what it is. And as you know, she's like, the guy's singing so loud, the band's so loud, you can't hear his lyrics, you can't hear what he's saying, and so I don't go to church anymore. And I think the key to all of what we're talking about is, how do you serve the people that are coming to your church well? And that means you've got to be thinking about everybody. And so it is kind of like a tightrope walk if you've got a multi-generational church, to be able to make everybody happy. And you can't always make everybody happy. But I think that the key of this whole thing is trying to say, where are we headed as a congregation, and how can we best serve those people that are in our church with this thing, which is music? And I think another idea is to maybe try this stuff, you know, during worship practice. If you're gonna push the boundaries of what you're already doing, push them during a worship practice, and then maybe have a few folks come in and listen to what you guys are doing and say, how does that feel to you? And if they go, man, it doesn't feel like we're connecting at all, then try and strip it back, you know, or even start really strip back. Try and lead worship without the tracks for a little while. And then when you add the tracks, see if it feels like you're adding or if you're taking away from your ability to lead people well. And then, you know, just keep judging, like Josh was saying. Try things out. See what works. If it doesn't feel like it works. I actually led worship with a friend of mine, Chuck Denny, at a smaller church the other day. And we'd been playing at this big kids conference, like a youth conference. And there was a lot of kids there. So we were rocking out with tracks and everything was awesome. And then we went to play the small church. And during the rehearsal time, I said to him, man, this just feels terrible with the tracks. And so we just totally stopped playing with tracks. We just played, like, the three of us, bass, drums, and acoustic guitar, and it just felt like 10 times better. But we were off the click. We weren't playing with a click track. And there were only about 150 folks there. And it just felt like we got way more connected with the people, and we felt like we connected with the Lord better without having a whole bunch of tracks running. So that's just whatever.
As a parent, like, I think about my kids, right, and how I run my family. And my wife and I were always discussing parenting things and whatever. And one of the things we talk about a lot is, you know, it's important that our kids know that we love them. And if we really do love our children and we put in the effort and we're trying our best, that's going to give us a lot of grace in the process. That, like, our kids, like, my parents sometimes, like, oh, we didn't do everything perfect. And I'm like, I don't care. I knew that you loved me. You can make a whole lot of mistakes if the true value is that you love me. And if your values truly are to serve your congregation, if that is where your heart really is, to serve God and your congregation, to serve God through serving your congregation, if that's where your values are, that's going to give you a lot of grace. Yeah, you might have that person that complains or whatever, but you'll have room to try things because your heart will come through in the process. And it won't just be this, like, well, this is this cool song I want to do, and I don't really care if people like it or not. It becomes about how am I serving? Am I serving everyone well? And if that's what you're truly trying to do, I think that that'll resonate with your community. So anyway, that's worship music without all the hype. Now, if you actually do want to go and learn how to play songs the way that they are on the record, with a five-piece band, not with all the tracks and everything, you can head over to worshipartistry.com and sign up for a free account and give it a shot. But understand, we chose the name Worship Artistry. We didn't choose the, you know, worship, play it right, worship songs or whatever. Like, we chose Worship Artistry because the idea is for you to learn from what these people are doing and then to take it and make it your own. And I hope that value comes through everything that we do here. One thing that you could do to really help us out is, if you have member mail questions, you could hit us up at facebook.com/worshipartistry. You can also email us support@worshipartistry.com, or even leave a comment in any of the green room posts. That works. It's also a huge help to us if you will take the time and write up a review on iTunes. It's super helpful. We are getting out there a lot, and I think that has a lot to do with it. So if you can take a few minutes, that'd be really helpful. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
Later, guys.
Peace.
Catch you guys later.